SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Ocala, the OBS sale, the start of the two-year-old in training sale season. Good morning. Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone, Sirius XM online, and at the website too, stevebick.com. Happy to move the scene, at least for 2 days, from the Tampa Clearwater area after a really fun Tampa Bay Derby day that saw... The latest Judmont machine come popping out, and of course Tacitus and Billmott with the mild Tampa Bay Derby upset. The top three horses all going to move forward out of it, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about everything that went on at Tampa, everything that went on at Aqueduct. The Big A, of course, and after Kieran McLaughlin was with us last week, I said to Kieran, might be calling you back Monday, Tuesday next week, and that's going to be the case. Heichel winning that Gotham, and just an interesting set of results really everywhere. Lots of the turf action to discuss, the fillies, the three-year-olds. How about Rusty Arnold coming back with Concrete Rose to win that Florida Oaks. You had Jorge Abreu with Espresso Shot, and it was a good news, bad news weekend for Abreu with the Stellar Agent effort at Tampa not going the way they would have liked. Vino Rosso came back with a bang, really came back running. Yesterday, Divine Miss Gray, we should note, and what a great job Danny Gargan's done with Divine Miss Gray, and he continues to get Tax, who seems to be working really well toward the Wood Memorial. The top finishers, Heichel and Mind Control, already talking about getting back together again in that Wood Memorial, and who knows who's going to come from Tampa. Certainly the Tampa top finishers are going to spread out the wood and the bluegrass and much more. The Honeybee, Mark Cassie's going to join us here about midway through the show, 10:30. Cassie will swing in. It was actually, I think about it, just realized, good news, bad news kind of Saturday, probably within 90 minutes of each other. Chocolate Kisses in the Honeybee, and the disappointment involved for Cassie and the team with Dreammaker, who got completely compromised right off the break at Tampa Bay and spotted the field, and the race was over for him 20 yards in. But again, he'll look for something else. Chad Brown with a nice weekend, particularly at Tampa. So much to look at. Some like it hot Brown and Mike Maker, and he just continues to march through the synthetic surface avenue at Turfway. Wesley Ward with a great series of performances from his horses at Turfway on Saturday as well. So lots to digest on the racing front, the sales side of things, this OBS scene that I was so excited to come up here when it occurred to me that we could do it, and happy to be here. And it is just absolutely gorgeous what Tom Ventura and his team have done here. And the first time I've seen it, and my first impression was, I can't believe how big the place is. I didn't realize what you think of it as, it's kind of a, kind of the provinces, and instead it's a sprawling complex that is absolutely fantastic with the track and that portion of it, 20 plus barns and even room to grow. And OBS, this sale gets things going. The two-year-olds will be coming through. They've already had the, of course, the days of Breeze Show activity. There's lots of review going on. Today will be an inspection day as the prospective buyers comb the 600 on paper in the catalog, and there's probably about 100 outs, so probably 500 through the ring. And we'll talk to Becky Thomas, who's here, the breeder consigner from New York, who has got a wonderful reputation and may have the sale topper. It could turn out early tomorrow. We'll be here tomorrow when the sales activity starts, just to our side here, just to our left in the beautifully renovated auditorium. Of course, in addition to the racing action that we're going to dive into, there's plenty of business news to discuss and off the racetrack kind of news, and that includes the future wager activity and much more. Then there's the matter of the Santa Anita progress, and there has been progress. Speaking of Santa Anita, you're on. Rick Hammerly with us, and you're making the grand tour. Everybody says I'm on this busman's holiday, but you're circulating.
I am circulating, Steve. It's great to be here. You mentioned the building here. I was here in November, and there was a lot of scaffolding and hammering going on, and they've really done a great job, as you said. We're sitting in a lobby here. It could be the lobby to the Four Seasons Hotel down the street. But the sales arena, what they've done here is fantastic. But for me, I don't get a chance to do this stuff, or I never have, because right. I'm busy head down at the racetrack doing other stuff. So I'm like in a little like a fantasy camp type of thing. And seriously, this is another side of the game that I don't pretend to know anything about, or never fake that I did know anything about. But I've been to a sale or two, and it's something that I really encourage any fan that is near a sale, just go walk around, sit down, check out the scene, all the people. But this run of 5, 6, 7 days, I compare it to the NFL Combine.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, so on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, that's where the athletes perform. They line up one at a time and breeze in front of everybody that wants to see here. Most of the scouts, I call them, I guess, are here. You know, 100, 150 people timing the horses, you know, watching them go by. And they do that for 3 days. As Steve said, there's, I think, 577 horses with maybe 10 to 20% scratch rate. So you think about 150, 60 horses a day going by, you know, one each every, you know, 6, 7 minutes. So it's just a 3-day run. So that, check that out. Then we had yesterday and today, the 2 days before the sale. I kind of consider that the interview phase. You know, I was walking around yesterday, and the potential buyers would go out and, you know, ask for a horse to be brought out, and they'll check it out and jog it up and down the Kelly Breen walking by here.
Look at that, KJB.
All the stars are
Where's the snappy hat? He's going to swing by.
So, like I said, it's kind of an interview phase where prospective buyers will go by, and if they like a certain horse that they thought they liked on the track, they'll pull him out and get a first-hand look at him, jog him up and down the path there, and put him back in and repeat that all day. And today's another one of those type of days where they'll finalize. And then the draft, which starts tomorrow, the 2 days of the sale, where all that information's been disseminated, and they come in and we start the auction. And it's a pretty interesting process how this is done, very professional, very you know, very matter of factly. But the waves of the people that come in, like I said, the scouts come in early and kind of do some legwork, groundwork, setting the stage, and then the owners will start showing up and they'll review the short list that they've got in front of them and inspect and bid and hope they hit a home run. But I'm going to say, I asked Tom Ventura, who's been such a gracious host to us, to, you know, how many of these, I asked him how many of these horses have been through the ring before. before they got
here.
So he said,
maybe two, maybe weanlings, maybe yearlings.
So basically, he said, oh, close to 75% of these have been through the sale. So some of them, you know, were bought earlier, obviously, and trying to sell them here and make a little profit and move on. But it's quite an interesting experience.
Well, and of course, you talk about what's going to go on today and what's already gone on since the start of the Breeze Show portion. And we, you know, we talk about it whenever we have sales opportunities. And you know, you talk about the interview phase, and there's little things that when it comes to seeing them up close, looking at their confirmation closely, it's one thing to see them breeze. And you know, when it comes to then picking out and fine tuning, slap those headsets on, KJB, Kelly, John Breen. Look at you with the epic dreamer hat. There we go. Pull that down. There we go. And
up and running.
And look at you're here. You're the early horseman gets the sail topper.
Gets the worm.
Congratulations on Ehrlich yesterday.
Thank you. Another winner.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, in fact, I'm trying to think. Was that one of Franco had five?
No, that was Eric Cancel.
Eric Cancel. There you go. Good job. And, you know, the first immediate thing we were talking, Hammer just started to talk about the fine-tuning and picking out. I got two questions on that front for you. One of the things I hear about perspective buys here that makes it a little difficult, the synthetic surface. How do you adjust for time and for performance on this surface into what is going to be for you operating almost exclusively on dirt?
It's tough. I'm not a big fan of the poly track. I see some of the horses. You have some stuff that's over here that's a horse is by a Kitten's Joy, out of a Kitten's Joy mare in particular that I went to see, and I said, this might be a poly horse. You know, it's got a little bit of a turf foot. I've purchased horses, got the horse Epic Dreamer that's a nice horse that we bought him here. It's a tough deal. I wish it was dirt. I know the consigners that are here, they like it. Maybe to say it clumps horses a little bit more together for them and eliminate some of the worst of the ones, the duds that everybody's trying to avoid as part of business. But it is tough, and you do have to do your homework and look at the videos. A lot has to do with the stride, and hopefully that you can see what you can see.
Wanted to mention that Kelly brought that up. There's a synthetic all-weather surface here at Ocala, and I think it's the only major sale that has that. And I believe one of the reasons they do it with the 3 days of the and when they come up to April, they're going to have 6 days of Breeze Show. It's easier to keep the track a little bit more consistent, and I think it's just for that. So, if we get a little bit of rain, the track stays in pretty much the same shape. And so they don't want someone that breezes on Monday and then they breeze on Wednesday and they end up being a second slower. So the track, the consistency of the surface is more important to so everyone has a fair shot when they go to compare times.
No doubt. And at the same time, I would also, I would think, Kelly, that there's the potential to get a bargain. A horse that went over the surface that underperformed because of the circumstances, that, if the people that only start looking at horses that went, 10-1 and don't look at horses that went slow, they're missing potential successes.
Definitely. And you go to a guy that's pinhooking the horses and they'll say, this horse at the farm on the dirt really excelled, and we're a little disappointed, and it's not going to bring as much as that we hoped that it would bring, and we're probably going to have to sell it for what it is, and to relay that to an owner and to tell them, say, hey, listen, they really liked your horse that you're on, and at the meantime that we probably get it at a better price because it didn't showcase as well.
How much of those kinds of decisions is based on consigners and the developers that you've got existing relationships with?
You just being here and, kicking tires and everything else, you come up across, certainly you have a horse that, just like you had described, as to looking for a horse, having a horse maybe didn't work as well as you had thought. You were going to put a line through it, and yeah, you know what? I'm going to go and see that guy, and I'm going to go and ask him if anything happened to that horse, and you keep him on your list. And it's a matter of doing all of this and seeing all the different people and being here as to trying to find out, you know, for sure of I got a couple sleepers. I put a little S on the bottom of the card for my sleeper report to say, hey, these guys didn't pay a whole lot for this horse, and the horse might be, you know, like to say, a little bit of your sleeper.
And one of the things about that that certainly enters into it, when you come to Florida, and traditionally at this sale, and in a different way at Timonium, when you've got up-and-coming stallions that have entered the marketplace at bargain rates, uncaptured, of course, down here last year, and Cantheros, who you know was a perfect example of that. Some of the stallions that had started in Florida and gravitated up to Kentucky, and the same thing happens in the Mid-Atlantic with any of those that whether they stay in Maryland, Pennsylvania, etc., or New York. That's one of the, you know, that's one of the really fun parts of it. And you've had your share of those types.
Yeah, I've done well coming here and not looking for a specific type. You know, I just have a note right here I'm looking at, and it's Constitution. I haven't seen any Constitutions before this weekend.
And I said, you're impressed.
They caught my eye. They're, you know, 2 years ago, if it was a, like Violence was the hot. You know, you didn't see him until you saw him, and you said, hey, he's throwing some nice-looking horses. And now I've seen a couple of Constitutions, and I said, hey, you know, this horse is – he's going to throw something.
We were talking earlier about this process going on. So a lot of people send, you know, scouts, they call them, ahead of time to look. And Kelly, you do most of your own.
Mm-hmm, correct.
So you know, Kelly's trainer, boom, does the whole thing, probably feels a lot more comfortable with – taking his own opinion rather than listening.
It is
to other
also
people.
Good to have multiple eyes. You know, because there are times when you miss something or you see something and you come back and, you know, I also have a process, even going through whether it's 2-year-olds or yearlings. One of my sidekicks was Dr. Tom Broken. And there's something when you miss like a curb because you're so worried about what's going on in the front end and you're looking at this and he comes back and he kicks my in the shin and he says, he's shaking his head, no. It's great to have a little bit of a team. I do like to do what I do and how I do it, but there is no I in team. You have to have all your, you know, your help and your ducks in a row.
There is an I, however, in veterinarian.
now Kelly started in this game working for one of the best guys as far as I'm concerned. As picking out a horse and not paying a whole lot and having him go on and either resell or do excellent on the track, and that's Ben Perkins. And I'm sure you learned a lot from him.
He was the best. And if to try and be a student, I followed him around. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of pointing things out and saying this is what it is. It was just a matter of trying to read his mind and spend a lot of time at those sales. And, you know, we were over here in OBS and he liked the spot, second floor, you know, up down a little bit so you can get the right angle that he liked to see horses. You don't have to do that as much now because you have the
video
tapes, but he still liked his angle of where you could see and what it was. And following him around, I learned a lot. It was great. He was a great mentor in so many dynamics of horse racing. Between, I still call him up and talk to him. I says, I have an owner that's over here, and do I keep the owner? Do I look to sell a horse, or you know, or why am I not getting my right percentage on selling this horse? And you know, so many times he's old school and said, stick to your guns and stick to your heart and do what's right. And I tell you what, it worked out 99 out of 100 times. So he's my man.
Who among some of the first crops you mentioned Constitution, but who else is, because there does seem, I know that this sale has sort of flip flopped with April. That's one of the conversations we've heard that in recent years, what used to be the big spring sale here was March. Now really the April has kind of replaced it, and it is a bigger sale with 1,200 cataloged typically. Apparently, from the buzz I heard, it feels like you know, a potential for, you know, for some bargain types.
Yeah, I mean, there's horses that are going to go through the cracks here, I mean, I'm looking at, not to say that it's a second year sire. Golden Sense has a couple of horses on my list.
Yep.
He might be first year. I've never heard of him for a sire. Shaking It Up.
Oh, sure.
He had a horse on my list. And just to be here to look at all the different horses, you know, I mean, I literally turned the page and another Shake It Up. You know, it wasn't like I come to Ocala and saying, I got to have a Shake It Up. But when you're looking at horse flesh and, you know, you still have your Into Mischiefs here, I mean, a big smorgasbord here.
You mentioned Shake It Up. Now, he won the Malibu.
Sure did. And Midnight Loot that was very nice.
So, but it's funny, Kelly mentioned that. I've heard that name a couple times, too. And you never know, right? What are some of the other freshman stars? Bayern, is his first crop as well?
Yes. Yes, I do have a Bayern on my list. You know, I have a couple of Stay Thirsties that are, you know, hopefully that he's going to be a little bit hotter than what he's been.
Well, that's a case where you're talking about fantasy drafts. Those kinds of stallions, that's the post-hype types that had the big flashy introduction and expectation, didn't necessarily get an early stake success, an early stake winner, and now some of the bloom is off and people immediately dismiss the stallion as having any real, you know, major power, and that's when you suddenly you'll see him start popping.
But I do have the owner texting me that I got to go start looking at some horses.
Well, and before you go, valedictorian, nice second last week in the Honey Fox.
Yep, trying to decipher where we're going to go with her. If I'm going to look at something that's there's a non-graded race on the undercard at Gulfstream on Florida Derby Day. There's a spot. Do I take a chance of running her in a Grade One at Keeneland? You know, it's. How many chances do you have to run a horse that you was a claimer in a Grade One? It's trying to figure out, do you be 2-1 in a $100,000 race, or do you roll the bones and take a shot at how many Grade Ones are there for a filly that you just claimed? So,
some thoughts on last week with Epic Dreamer as well and the Fountain.
You know, it was a tough race. Maybe he got caught up in a little bit. He didn't break great. We're just going to regroup. I don't know what we're going to do with him just yet, but it's nice to have a horse of a three-year-old caliber like we had Ehrlich run yesterday. You have a three-year-old, it's all of a sudden, it's like a chess game. You got to try and figure out where you're going, what you're going to do, how far you're going to go. Was two turns too far for this horse right now? Where am I going to – do I point for a Preakness and regroup? I don't know what we're going to do yet, but it's nice to have the problems.
Well, the Tessio as a win-and-in type for the Preakness might be a terrific avenue.
Might be Ehrlich.
Ooh, look at you. All right, folks, you got an early, there you go. You got. Right. There's no Preakness future wager, but there it is. Always one of our favorite visitors. The one thing we didn't talk about is the Monmouth situation, which you got to be delighted.
I'm trying to gear up. I am a little light on horses right now, and we're winning. I mean, we're putting them in good spots, winning and getting claimed, which isn't the worst thing. So we're trying to, whether if I'm going to be claiming more in Florida, claim some in Kentucky, buy some horses here. I'm all over the place. So whatever I could do to get one in the barn, that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, if you're looking to claim one and you want, or you want Kelly to buy one, Kelly John Breen on Twitter, and there you go. He'll put you in the business right away.
You got it. Good to see you guys,
Kelly.
He might have won the Belmont Stakes, but watch out for those two-year-old races at Monmouth, too. Don't kid yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can, by all rights, we should break, but we won't because I don't want to take too much time from Becky Thomas. And Beck, would you rather use the, I don't want to, the hairs, all right? You don't mind the headset? There you go. Put that, slap that right on, and I forgot to take a picture of Kelly to put it up on the tweet machine. What a pleasure! You've not been on the show in like 8 years. Easily.
Yeah, I haven't seen you.
No, which is funny, and whether I don't know why. I mean, well, you're. you're grafted to the barns, and you know, when it comes to the New York sale and whatever else, to where any sale that you turn up. But certainly your profile was established early and continues to shine.
Well, thanks. We've had to expand our parameters here in trying to be successful with our polarized industry. So we do quite a bit of breeding. We obviously have the New York farm, and so I have upwards of 50 mares now, various partnerships, you know, that support stallions in New York as well as in Kentucky.
Well, and for those that know the name, because if you follow the breeding side and the sales side, Becky's name. But give everybody the background, because you've had an interesting series, and you've adjusted to the market conditions, basically.
Well, really, I started off, my education is, I have a BSN and, from the University of Florida. I'm a nurse by education. I have, my whole background is cattle and cow ponies and barrel racing. So I did that growing up and started barrel racing with some thoroughbred people and went straight into 2-year-olds. And so pen hooking training is what I really enjoy. I love training. I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than training a like the filly that we watched yesterday, a half sister to. I mean, it's rewarding training something that you actually did the mating on and have the mother and all that stuff. But the market, we start off buying just yearlings for 2-year-olds and then drop down to weanlings to yearlings and then weanlings to 2-year-olds. And, we don't have 35,000 registered thoroughbred foals anymore. We have 21 and change.
Yeah, and for those that that might have picked up on the reference, Becky, and this under the Sequel Stallion brand, bred Split Time, that yesterday ran a dynamite race against Divine Miss Gray, who is really northeast, the eastern half of the country's. It's tough not to say, top distaffer. I mean, she's been, at this point, Danny Gargan has had a sustained success with her. I voted her third. In the Eclipse voting last year.
Yeah, those things are, like, really exciting for us because it's a New York bred. I mean, she was not by a New York sire. She was by Take Charge Indy, which is a great family, a horse of Windstar. So we were really, really happy with that. We have a 2-year-old here at this sale that's by Freud that Linda Rice, the trainer, Split Time, just got through looking at. And, she's a big not-for-love looking filly, but those are, those are fun. As there's a lot of them that don't work out, but we've tried to kind of adjust. We've got some breeding partnerships in New York with Gainesway, with Barbara Banky, Stone Street, Twin Creeks Racing, Eclipse Racing. So we've tried to expand out enough and take advantage of where there could be some niches that might afford us some profitability.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Becky for the first time the other night at dinner with the Venturas, and I know they've been friends, so I've heard her name through the years. And it was very interesting to hear not only what you do here, but your interest in stallions and, ownership and kind of going off on that. And New York is, you mentioned New York, you have some connections up there that you're working on. And I was very impressed with, the whole breadth of the game that you're into. And
we stand Freud, which is like, I call our farm the farm that Freud built, which was originally a partnership with Coolmore. We are actually remain in partnerships with Coolmore Ashford. We've got several mares that are going to have that are in full to their freshman sires that, one of the ploys that I think, or the plays that I think are really significant to be able to do, because there's so much money in New York breeding and racing that a lot of the Kentucky farms, should, and some of them are, capitalize on foaling their freshman sire's first progeny in New York. So we've got a partnership right now that the mares are going back to our stallions in New York, but they're first foals by Classic Empire, by Practical Joke, by those, in a partnership with the farms.
Speaking of that, how much movement have you seen in your world to take advantage of the New York situation with the purses and the breeding program improved, especially monetarily, over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years?
You know, the problem is everyone. I don't know anybody that doesn't significantly appreciate the funds that are available in New York. You know, not just, you know, in racing purses itself. I mean, it's, you know, for me, I will send more horses to the racetrack than I ever have, and I'm a blue-collar person. But I, you know, training allows me to know where I can be competitive, and I train a lot of New York breds. But the problem is the industry shrinking. There are a lot of farm owners that are not profitable anymore. So for them to say, well, gosh, we're going to recommend to our clients that you ship to New York, we lose that income. We lose the ability to maybe get a commission on a, you know, on a mare that they've been boarding, you know, to be able to go to a Kentucky stallion. They lose that revenue source. So as much as I literally don't know anybody in Kentucky that wouldn't like to be able to have the benefits of the New York program, but they have their own employees to feed, their own farms to be able to support. And so that's, you know, that's what's happened with our shrinking industry.
And I think you bring up a good point. It's not as easy as saying, hey, I'm going to just move to New York. Mm-hmm. It's like moving your house and your kids. I mean, you really have to make an effort to go ahead and do that. It's not push button. But the small little steps that are being taken, you can see the impact on the New York racing.
Well, and as somebody who tried to breed a little and who campaigns all New York breds, there and basically has lived now close to 20 years in New York, and the difficulties that we encountered, first in the franchise debate and some of the things that were going on even afterward, where there should have been post Birdtown and Funnyside, these should be absolute glory years for New York breeding. Instead, there was this uncertainty that left breeders with, other than people like you and Chester Broman and Joe McMahon and, you know, a handful of people that dug their heels in and were committed, there were people that moved their mares. And then there was again a ripple here most recently, and the stability and the circumstances in Maryland and Pennsylvania too saw more mares dispersed. And then you fold in the fact that we don't really have much of a stallion program as we should, a stallion series, as you know, for instance, compared to Florida in New York, that reinforces. And instead, what's happened is there's been created this two classes of New York breds. There's these Kentucky stallion drops that can compete anywhere at any time, and then there's these potential stallions, and you guys are standing some that absolutely could just as easily be in Kentucky, Destin and Leaban and so forth, and it's very hard. I mean, if you're taking your backyard mare, what did the small New York breeder do, Becky? I mean, it's very difficult.
Okay, something that you just said is, you know, significant in that I think it's much more difficult to distribute information to a lot of our breeders, whereas I may be in Ocala. Well, maybe I'm in California. Maybe I'm in Kentucky at whatever various sales. A lot of our New York breeders, they may not get out of New York. So their perception of the sale is one sales company, which is Fasig Tipton, and one yearling sale. And then they've added the mixed breeding stock sale at the beginning of October, which it's very difficult to tell people that, oh, we want you to come. I mean, you have no sales without a breeder base and a buyer base. And so it's always going to be difficult in a regional market, as you can see with the elimination of the October mixed breeding stock sale here. But One of the things, because we do have, you know, we have a very lucrative agreement with NYRA, as well as the state of New York, that provides for us to have a lot of funding. So there is an additional $1.23 million that has been added to our stallion stakes this year, which will allow the richest stallion stakes races in the United States, whereas the Sunshine Millions and the Florida races here have been $400,000 purses. We will have two $500,000 stallion stakes.
Nice.
But if you're asking someone like me, I think that Mr. Panza and the head of the New York Breeding and Development Fund, Tracy Egan, as well as the head of our New York Breeding Fund, or our New York Breeding Program, Jeff Canizo, have worked really, really hard to be able to say what is going to effectively drive up our numbers. I don't know, and I have a lot of mares. We are the leading stallion farm simply by numbers, by awards. Those numbers added to the stallion stakes still only benefit a race card of 80 horses, 80 owners. Those I don't know a single person that has said to me, well, gosh, I want to send a couple more mares to New York because you guys have a stallion stakes program that is bar none. Our situation is that the majority of our breeders are now commercial breeders. They don't breed to race. I mean, you look 20 years ago, you look 30 years ago, certainly, but even you look 5 years ago, and the economics of the industry have forced a lot of commercial breeders where they sold a few horses to be able to support racing. There are many, many, many more breeders that sell commercially to support the farm. Hmm. They are not breeding to race anymore. So when you look at commercial, you're going to, which is why you see in Kentucky, a horse like City of Light. Here's a horse, notwithstanding. I mean, why do I have the lieutenant? Because Mike McCarthy was so instrumental in saying to me, Becky, this horse trained lockstep with City of Light. He said, we had some issues, and he said, but this is a really good horse. That means something for me from somebody that my horse trained with that horse. My horse, I have to justify. But, you know, you take a horse like City of Light, which I am lucky enough to be a shareholder of City of Light. Well, you know, our investment, we look really smart. Well, we make a lot of investments that don't look very smart. I mean, because our market is what used to be the fourth year before you kind of had like, oh, we don't know about that sire. Let's wait till they run. Now it's the flavor of the moment.
Right.
I mean, this year we're going to breed a lot of horses to this one stallion. Well, next year there's another stallion they're going to breed a lot of horses to.
On that topic, and of course the season's just underway, really only, you know, about three and a half weeks old. That stallion roster of Freud, Alpha, Destin, Leia Band, Mission Impassable, Stefan Otzi, and the lieutenant, also Union Jackson, the Hot Dixie Chick son. How many, and you don't have to specify, but I mean, in terms of a full book, what makes it work for you for that kind of a variety of stallions, including, you know, the newest ones?
I'm not going to change the demographics of what the entire industry is doing, which is what we do in New York is exactly what happens in Kentucky, which is your first year, you hope, like for us, we want to get a critical mass of 100 mares. If we can get 70 mares the second year, we're like thrilled and delighted. After that, once you get in the third and fourth years, you got to pray you've got some baby averages, you've got some yearling averages.
Strong physicals, horses that are making a good impression on buyers.
Like a horse like Leo Ban. I mean, Southern Equine could not have been more supportive.
Yep.
They have 50% ownership. They are all in. I mean, there is a layaban half to the sale topper at Vasig July 2017. the Medaglia filly. I mean, those are brave moves, and there's a lot of brave moves like that, to where people that are vested in the program, you know, have put some, like Twin Creeks breeding Espresso Shot. Well, Espresso Shot, that's a Mission Impossible. That's a New York sire. That one race Twin Creeks earned. We're capped per race at $40,000 for the breeder. We're capped at $10,000 for the stallion. They are the primary owners of Mission Impossible, so they earn very close to $50,000 as being a breeder and owner of the stallion for that race.
And I'll make a quick point in here, and then I got a follow up. But for those that wonder, and get wild-eyed about horses leaving the track and seemingly being taken out of competition early, when you hear those numbers, understand that when you get a stallion prospect and you have the interest in them and you can get them off the track and basically take money off the table, it's the only way you can do it to survive. And when you hear people like Charlotte Weber, who I remember asking about Donner and Serve and Brilliant Speed, and she said, and she was funny about it. She goes, I cannot lose $7-8 million a year and justify being involved in this. You said you have to take off the table. Seth Klarman, another perfect example. They're doing that because you just can't bleed money, and it's not a bottomless pit.
I would never do what we do in New York in any other state simply because of the program. I mean, it has been a situation where we have led the Stallion Awards for many, many years. We have led the Breeders' Awards this year. Mr. Broman beat us. We're going to allow that because I trained for them. Could not, you know, because I think we were for sure second. But, you know, he breeds an incredible roster of horses that I'm so thrilled to be able to train.
How is his departure and the Broman's planned departure from the scene, the winding down of their operation? How is it going to impact not just New York, but the game in general?
It has a huge impact in New York because he has equally split his mare base between New York sires and Kentucky sires. I mean, Highway Star is a Girolamo, a horse that we stood for Darley the first year. And, so he will take those kind of horses. They are literally equal. So, his departure is fluid in that he is not, we're selling the two-year-olds this year. What he does, going forward will be depend. You know, he's doing his estate planning to be able to make sure that there are no loose ends. I'm feeling like he's going to have a successful sale where he feels like it's viable to continue what he's doing on some scale for some time. He just doesn't want to depart anywhere without having any loose ends. He's a very, very generous, wonderful person.
That win, the Highway Star win at Del Mar, and looking at Chester and Mary Broman, seconds after the win, I mean, it was so sweet. And I mean, obviously, there's countless, virtually every, I mean, everybody that wins, you you're happy for. But for him to have that moment, and in with all the commitment he's had, they've had over decades, from when the New York program was literally, just backyard program.
Well, what's interesting about that particular race, I'd like to take credit, but you're referring to Bar of Gold, because it's Bar of Gold is who won the Breeders' Cup.
Not Highway.
And she's a Medaglia. The only reason the Bar of Gold went, 66-1 shot, is because of Highway Star. Highway Star was on top of her game, and she was just rocking. And Mr. Broman loves, he's very, very loyal to his trainers. John Kimmel's trained for him for, I'd say, upwards of 25 years, close to it anyway. But Rodrigo has trained, Rodrigo Ubillo, who's trained for him for many years. I mean, what an opportunity for Rodrigo to go to the Breeders' Cup. So Mr. Broman was like, yeah, we're going to the Breeders' Cup. Rodrigo's going to the Breeders' Cup. Very, very, very important. And so then he said, you know, we might as well take Barigold. And I said, well, what's John say about that? And he said, I don't know, but I'm going to talk him into it. And I was like, okay. So I talked to John, and John's like, well, you know, he wants to go, and it's really exciting. That was all Mr. Broman.
That's great.
Oh, it's a great story.
Well, and on the track apron, on the path from the paddock, Gabby Gaudette and I were standing there, and Barigold was one of the last to go by as they were heading up to the chute. And she looked unbelievable, And Gabby had made a comment pre-race, and then we saw her, and I ended up sending in a couple of, it was hysterical. I mean, just unbelievable. And actually, I mean, I had a lot of things live to Amy's to Josie Carroll's filly, who ran a tremendous race to get beat at the final jump. But it was. I just remember just laughing because it was one of those things where, oh my God, she might have looked better than anybody on the racetrack.
That was all. That's what you get when you get. I mean, it's like for me, I had Rick doesn't remember, but I met Rick when I had Have You Gone Away in the Breeders' Cup the year before, that's another kind of a little niche thing that I do. I will buy horses like that she was a listed stakes winner, and Tom Morley has been a friend of mine for many years. I met him when he was with Darling Flying Start, and I gave him to her, or gave her to him, and so that was, but those kind of stories are what I think makes our business, you know, very personal, very emotional, and, you know, then we just have to weigh the economics of it.
You know, and I had put up, as we were talking earlier, I had put up speed dating on the screen, and just looking down, near and dear is Mrs. Nielsen, and that's
Saratoga
Sid Max's sister.
Yes. Yeah,
how about that?
It's a true, and you know, obviously that race yesterday is a good indicator of where she can run with the big girls. So it was really exciting.
Same question we asked Kelly Breen in terms of some of the new crop, new sire type stallions. Who's caught your eye here early as the 2-year-old in training sale season starts?
You know. Until we get to the sale, I always say to everybody at our first year or our first sale, I always say Happy New Year, because for us, this is our new year, and we start our year here. And so if I have not, I am somewhat of a boutique trainer that I train for the same people I've trained for years, and then, of course, my partnerships and my own stuff. So any horse that I am selling is a horse that I have had. I don't have outside horses. So as far as, you know, watching the Breeze Show, which I can't consistently watch it, I gotta go back and forth, but I do have, you know, I know he's the buzz horse, but I do have two American Pharaohs, one in the sale and one in the April sale, which I think are very, very nice horses. The one in the sale went 10 flat. But really, I don't. He's not a sprinter. He just is a really efficient mover.
So getting down to the basics for me, I'm sitting here learning, as I was talking before you got here, about this is kind of a new world for me that I'm enjoying. Learning. When it comes down to someone such as yourself, how do you decide which sale? I mean, obviously, how far along they are. That goes without saying, but. You have something, maybe I'll take them into March sale. You know, maybe I'll wait for this one for April. Is there a big difference, or how do you decide and what, you know, that's best for you and your clients to where to sell them and when?
It's a really big difference. And because I know each of my horses intricately, because I've had them all along, I try to put the more precocious horses earlier, and then horses that are not as precocious, I try to put them, I mean, April OBS has become the go-to sale for really, I mean, April has proven that you can sell a good horse anywhere. I mean, Fazzik Tipton is considered and will, I don't see that changing, our premier two-year-old in training sale to start our season off. And as much as I would like to say that we've been able to create a buyer base for a less than top-end horse, I think it's very difficult in that sale when people are expecting the very, very best to create a market for a $30,000, $40,000 horse. And so it's not economically feasible for us to be able to go there, even though I've got some horses that I think, wow, that would be great. I just don't think so. So it will remain a boutique sale. But everyone expects when they go there, they expect to be able to pay big bucks. In my situation, because I felt like it was best for Mr. Broman to be able to market his horses in a place close to home, as many of them together. Mr. Broman's horses are all predominantly, we do have some horses in Fazzik, Maryland that are going to be later horses that are being marketed here, but I felt terrible because Boyd Browning is one of my favorite people also, and I have a couple of horses that I was headed down to Miami with that I won't be going there. I would have been down there had I not had the situation with Mr. Broman where I didn't want to leave a set of horses. I didn't want to go down there and then be worried about these.
You know, I did have to ask about Leoban too. I didn't want that to slip by. How many crawfish boils and gumbo cooks were figured into the contract? How many times do you have Gio come down to the farm in Hudson and cook?
Well, they were at
It is a lookalike.
Chip and John from Hillendale. I call him Hillendale John. The first two years they came for our stallion show, which I was deathly afraid. I mean, the New York population is not used to seeing, you know, the Chip and John show. And I got a little smarter about it. I talked to Mike Morano, who's the owner of Southern Equine. I was like, okay, now look, make sure that, you know, Eric, you know, because Eric, as you know, speaks exactly what he thinks. And I, you know, have representatives of other stallions there. And, of course, he did manage to raise his hand and keep talking about other stallions. Which one do you think's the best? He would ask other stallion people that were speaking when they're representing their horse. Don't you think my horse is better? You know, I mean, he's crazy.
He is crazy.
But but everyone in New York, because they are anomalies. You know, I mean, there's just not a big Cajun population in upstate New York. But we did this year. Chip had a little health issue that he was unable to cook. And I've always had like a separate menu. I've had a Cajun menu and then just a regular Eastern New York, Northern New York kind of menu. And so this year, because I didn't have any notice, so I had our regular caterers prepare gumbo. And, of course, Eric, oh, I can't wait to eat Yankee gumbo, Yankee gumbo. And it was quite good, by the way. It wasn't like theirs, but it was good.
Too funny.
The man without a filter. He's
oh,
here.
My God.
He's here running.
Oh, yes,
around. He's actually been kind of quiet, to tell you the truth.
When Union Jackson came out for the Saturday show this year, and he started, I mean, you're obviously not supposed to talk. We have the floor for each stallion. And our stallion shows are very well attended because we feed people very well. It's an event, and it's unlike open houses in Kentucky, where they have access to the stallions, really by appointment, pretty much any time. It is an event in New York. The weather makes it difficult, and we just happened to have great weather, even though it was frozen. We had really good clear weather, and when Union Jackson came out, Eric went to talk. I was like, no, you know, don't. And he said, man, he looks really good. He's really, because he was right off the track last year, you know. And he goes, man, he looks really good. And I thought, oh, thank goodness. You know, it was really good.
Well, Becky, I want to slip in. You're at Barn 9, and you've got your consignment. Then you've got the Broman horses, and really a nice variety. You've got an MC Philly, an Orb Colt, Heartspun Colt, two Mission Impassibles, a Freud Philly, an Alpha Philly, and a Flatter Colt. Those are yours, and then a nice variety of little everything. There's a Tappet. For the Bromans, the American Pharaoh you mentioned out of Kibosh, and the Tappets out of Artemis Agraterra, the Mike Hushin terror.
The first foal.
That's her first foal.
Artemis.
Good size, or
he looks like a gray Pinar the Nile is what I describe him.
Interesting.
Artemis herself was massive. Or not was, she is massive. She's a very,
so
very
was,
big.
Because a lot of times those first foals will be a little more, a little smaller.
Yeah, no, she's really big, and he's really big, very big and athletic. Artemis, though, even though she was very big, she was one of our precocious horses. She and a Heartspun Filly were the first of that crop that I sent out for Mr. Broman early because she was quick. So this colt is taking after her, and then he's really quick.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you look poised. A couple of 40 tails as well. I mentioned the American Pharaoh, an Uncle Mo Philly, an Alpha Philly.
Yeah, we've got the 40 tails as a half to Highway Star.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and this, how new was it for the Bromans to be selling fillies? How many typically would
they've he never sold any?
I didn't think so. No. I thought that he had retained, you know, that philosophy: sell the colts, keep the fillies.
No, he had the philosophy of race everything. So he last year was the first year that we sold every, like, if we were trying to, like, we have developed Hook and Ladder. We developed Hook and Ladder before. That was a group of mares that we bought to be able to breed, you know, to that horse. But as far as his overall breeding philosophy has been totally to race. So we sold a couple last year.
Okay.
And as yearlings, and some in the two-year-old sales. And then this year, it's pretty much, it's everything. If there's a horse that's a Broman horse that doesn't go to the sale, it's because we've had some setbacks or just not capable.
Well, Becky, Thomas certainly has proven herself capable time and time again. For those that want to see everything, the website?
Oh, it's Sequel
Stallions.
New York.
Sequel New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great website. Oh, come visit.
Well, and come visit Becky at Barn 9.
Right.
And the sale starts tomorrow. Right,
yeah.
Becky, when's
here
your first one go?
33. The big boy heads off the deal.
Wow. So, because we had heard, in fact, I think Tom Ventura said that they expected early fireworks.
Yeah.
And you're the firework.
Yeah. Well, there may be somebody before us, but I know that one's going to be fiery.
I love it.
Yeah. And it's amazing here how the word spreads, just like a hot
tip
at the track. They know immediately, you know, who's going to be it.
You don't get a lot of tire kickers for a horse like that.
Right.
So when you go and see who's looking at them, it's...
So on that end, we were talking earlier about what goes on. How many people will come by and say, can you pull that one out and let's take a look at him for one of the top horses?
You know, because we're all, I mean, the two-year-old pinhookers are excellent horsemen. So there's really, like, if we have someone that is, like, truly, you know, someone that just wants to see him. I mean, because we've been doing this so long. If they just want to see him, if they just wait a few minutes, then he'll be coming out for a person that's a legitimate buyer. I don't try to bring any horse in and out just for the heck of practice. So.
Well, and they get, and you know, that's one of the tests, actually, as a sale, pre-sale goes on, mm-hmm. is watching them to see how they take it, how they take being yanked out. Mm-hmm. 30 times, because some start to get impatient and annoyed, and the ones that take it all in, that's an added check when we hear about checking all the boxes.
Right, it is. So he doesn't like to miss any meals, so especially at food time. He doesn't like missing his lunch.
Well, and the Tappet, you know, an early Tappet, everybody, you know, the reputation is, I mean, how have you found them yourself when you've had them to train early?
I put them in a different category, and you watch for a lot of behaviors because they are magnificent animals. But I do watch to see what kind of behaviors.
If they're
for me, the fact that he's always in his tub. If you look at him today, I still think, when you have horses that are really efficient movers, they don't really have to go very fast. And so his case, I look at a horse like him, and he's heavy. And he's heavy because he didn't have to do that much. And that's joyful to somebody like me because you don't really train them. So I've been... like really happy.
Nice. When we hear individuals, this is what it's all about. Becky, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Best of luck the next couple of days. We're going to take our first break. We ripped through an hour here this morning. Rick Hammerly with me. We're live at OBS, at the beautiful new OBS. We'll get Johnny D in here right now, and not live. He's home, but we'll get Johnny in and we'll start talking about the weekend racing. As well, Mark Cassie at the bottom of the hour is going to join us. We'll talk racing and the sale with him as well. And, of course, he's really local, Cassie. Live at OBS at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.